The agenda is appointment of the members of the MMSD Mathematics Task Force. I'll turn the meeting over to the superintendent.
Thank you very much. If I could ask Jim Lewis and Merle Price to join us at the table. This evening, I want to do a couple of things. One is to kind of review where we are with my goal related to reviewing our mathematics curriculum and all the things associated with it. I apologize to the three board members who were in meetings with me earlier today because this will be a little bit repetitive, and Maya was there also. Want to go over exactly what we're trying to do and how we're doing it. Also give you an opportunity to meet Jim Lewis and Merle Price, who I'm appointing with your support as the co-chairs of the task force, and then give them an opportunity to give their impressions from where we are with this, and then give each one of you an opportunity to ask them any questions you have, and also going to ask each one of you to say one or two things that you would like to get out of this so that they have a starting point. This actually began, as the board knows, with the formulation of a performance goal for me for this year that really related to looking at our mathematics curriculum in several different ways and the performance of our students on our current mathematics curriculum in terms of achievement tests and other measures that we could come up with. When I saw, when I looked at the task assigned and realized what it entailed, I also realized that it was an extremely important review of not only our math curriculum, but also I believed, and after I talked with the people at the university, we all believed had national significance in terms of what was found. As you know, Madison has been for a long time a leader in constructivist kind of education, not just in mathematics, but in other things. And as we begin to look at that in what is a continuing national debate about the best ways to teach, it seemed to me to be important what we were going to find out about us. So I went to the leaders of the University of Wisconsin, specifically the provost, Pat Farrell, the dean of the School of Education, Dr. Julie Underwood, and the dean of Letters and Sciences, Dr. Gary Sandifer, and said, would you all like to buy into this and let's do something together as partners? And as our board knows, and I think our community knows, we've had a very long partnership with the University of Wisconsin. Out of that grew the idea of taking our current board goals, the goal for me, and developing an in-depth, very neutral study. And that's one of the things that the board requested and one of the things that we have made a point of doing here. We have applied for National Science Foundation funding to fund the task force. The task force will be made up, with your approval, the task force will be made up of people who truly are neutral on this issue, as neutral as we can possibly make them. And we looked at it, as much broader than just what kind of textbooks we use. That, in fact, the issues surrounding this are issues about student learning. Certainly what they're learning. The mathematics itself is important, and that we are, in fact, teaching mathematics correctly and the right kinds of mathematics. But the issues around instruction are much broader than just the teaching of mathematics. It also involves how children learn. It involves how we assess that learning. It involves how we use that assessment to inform instruction. It certainly involves how we teach our teachers to do the right kinds of things. So the approach here, and that's pretty much what I read into the goal for me, the approach here really was to put a pretty broad-based task force together, including two people who are mathematicians, which includes Jim, two people who are mathematics educators, two people who are cognitive science, people who look at how kids learn, and in the case of both of these two, they look at how kids learn math, but how kids learn math, and then Merle Price, the other, is an educational policy consultant. And I'll let them describe their credentials to you because they're both very, very impressive people. The task force itself is designed to look at over the next year, and if you recall, I came to you and asked for an extension of a year in order to do this so that we could apply for NSF funding. The task force itself will be dynamic in the sense that they will determine where they go. I felt it was critically important that myself or any of our staff not be involved in the process. If it truly is going to be neutral and it's not going to be biased in any way, we need to not be in that process, because I will readily confess that I have a bias in terms of the way children learn. And I think that obviously informs many of the things that we do. If it didn't, you should have fired me a long time ago, because I don't know what I'm doing. But we do not want my bias or the bias of our staff to in any way affect what this task force comes up with. So the only relationship that we will have with the task force will be that Lisa Wachtel and Brian Sniff will be liaisons to them, and they will be people, a single point of contact that the task force can talk to get information from us, data, those kind of things. The task force is seen as being very broad, and this is all laid out in the proposal that we gave you. The task force is seen as, again, taking a broad look, including, and a very important part of this, I think, is including surveys and focus groups with parents and students and our teachers actually on the ground teaching math to find out what they believe about what we're doing. That's the first part of the study, and that's the part that actually addresses my goals. The second part of the study is being run through the Wisconsin Center for Educational Research and is really a case study, and this is really why we believe that the NSF will fund this, is a case study of looking at the process as it's ongoing. One of the dilemmas that we have across the nation as school districts deal with controversial issues, whether that's around the issue of mathematics or reading or any of the other multitude of things that we deal with, is how do we resolve those issues in a way that everybody wins, that everybody feels included. And so the process itself has been designed to be very inclusive, but the case study is really looking at and monitoring completely that process, so that the report from the case study, which will actually, the final report will actually come out after this is finished, that case study really is looking at the actual process itself. And there will be people from Wisconsin Center for Educational Research who will be in every meeting, who will document exactly what happened, and then they will try to look at, after we're through and after the final report comes to you, they will try to look at the impact that that had on our community. Was it, in fact, a win-win? Did people leave? And it may not mean that we ever all agree, but it means that everybody feels like they were heard, that everybody believes the process was fair, that everybody believes that it was neutral, all those kind of things. The hope being that this process will do that, and then that will inform the national discussion about how you do this kind of process. So you're really looking at a two-tiered kind of study as we go forward. Another important thing, I think, is that the task force itself starts with the charge that the board gave me. One of the first things that I think Jim and Merrill talked to you about is the idea that we have to get some much more specific research questions around what you really want to know. But start with that. But I see it as a dynamic process. And what I have asked them to do from my viewpoint is wherever the data takes them in terms of questions, that's where they need to go. And we see the board being actively involved in that process. As they find something that they believe is important to inform their work, that they want to explore, to come to the board and say, okay, at a decision point here, we can go this way or this way, which way best informs the board. So this will be a dynamic process as we go through, involving the board at every step of the way, not the administration, in terms of what directions that the task force will go. This actually came up with a question from Lucy today, and I've thought about it a lot since, and we've actually talked about it this afternoon. It may very well be, as the task force gets into their work, that they need other people. And from my viewpoint, they will certainly have the ability to recommend those people or types of people to us to bring back to the board to say we need to add, and that could be a permanent member of the committee, or it could be within the proposal itself, we have consultant money. So it could be, for example, if they're really going to look at the math curriculum in depth, we may want to add three mathematicians to just do that in-depth kind of work. The task force would decide that and bring that to you to say, we need to add this, we need to add that. So the task force we have here is a starting point, I believe is balanced, covers the parts of this that are important. But as the task force goes forward, they may see other needs that I want them to feel perfectly free to come to you and add or ask for as they go forward. So having said that, that's the way I see this working, and I will ask Jim and Merle to introduce themselves to you and then to kind of give you their impressions of where we are and what we're doing. And not also, if any of the three board members who attended today's meetings, which I thought were excellent meetings, would like to, three board members in one addition, would, and including my, would like to share anything you saw or thought as you went through, I think that would be valuable to hear from you too, since you all went through that. So start with Jim.
Well, perhaps I'll primarily at this point try to introduce myself because I'm a stranger to you. I'm a professor of mathematics at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln. I've been there for 36 years. Much of my career was a traditional mathematician, and then for a very long time, 15 years as a department chair, trying to develop a research math department. I've had a few national opportunities that have included being co-chair of a National Academy of Science committee that produced a report called Educating Teachers of Science, Math, and Technology, New Practices for the New Millennium, rather long title. And I was then in the discipline chair of a committee that produced a document called The Mathematical Education of Teachers. And it made recommendations on behalf of the mathematics community as to what we believe is a necessary part of preparation of teachers. I'll tell you, for example, if you got a copy of our document, it says math specialist, starting in grade 5, students should learn mathematics from math specialist, not elementary trained people. So that's typical of the kind of thing that I've had great interest in. Currently, I'm on a National Academy committee called Committee on Teacher Preparation Programs in the United States, one of two mathematicians on that committee. And locally, I have been PI of a statewide systemic initiative, and I'm currently PI of a math science partnership, which is a middle school mathematics institute, which has will work with 135 teachers, I believe, who will get a master's degree in mathematics with a specialization in the teaching of middle-level mathematics. So my interest and my focus is on mathematics and the teaching of mathematics to future teachers. And that's probably enough about my background, though I'd be happy to answer any kind of question you might have.
I'm Merle Price, recently retired from the Los Angeles Unified School District after a 40-year career as a teacher, a high school teacher of chemistry and physics, an administrator in various roles, including a high school principal for 7 years, a regional district superintendent in two different geographic districts. And Roy Romer, recently retired as superintendent, former governor of Colorado, appointed me as the district's chief instructional officer or deputy superintendent for instruction. In that role, I had responsibility for several initiatives in all of the core academic areas, including a mathematics initiative to implement, at the time I was appointed, the recently adopted California Standards for Mathematics. There were state adoptions of textbook materials, but we had to provide instructional guides to teachers, create an assessment system, and a professional development plan. And I can tell you, like Jim, I come with no preconceived ideas about Madison or any biases about a particular curriculum, but with a lot of experience and understanding of the challenges, especially with the standards movement, and in the last 10 years or so, expectations that have higher stakes for students. At the time, some of us graduated from high school. Students didn't have to take mathematics beyond algebra or even algebra. But I'll use California as an example. The high school exit exam includes algebra and functions, also probability and statistics, geometry and measurement, in addition to just number sense and math facts and procedural mathematics. So looking not only at the Los Angeles Unified School District and now, if approved here, Madison, there are issues that we're looking at nationally through scale. I work with other districts like Providence and Denver and have done some work for the Institute for Learning and Pittsburgh, working with other districts. And they're all struggling with this now, you know, algebra for all in our secondary schools. And I can tell you that this charge of reviewing curriculum, looking at assessment data, and the kinds of supports needed to assure that students can succeed, and I believe in Madison it's algebra in the ninth grade, geometry in the 10th grade, you share a lot in common with what we have seen nationally and some of the things I've experienced. I will say one difference in my former role in Los Angeles Unified School District, looking at data meant 720,000 students and over 700 schools. So I don't know that the solutions are any easier, but the data may not be quite so massive. Since leaving that role, I now serve in the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Studies at Cal State University Northridge, and my main task is preparing future administrators, so I teach courses in instructional leadership to future administrators, and like Jim, we'll be happy to answer any other questions you might have.
One thing that I did not mention before we ask a question that I think is an important part of this that I kind of left out as I was going through. One of the challenges that we have and one of the challenges that we're asking certainly the task force to look at is that when we're talking about our mathematics curriculum, we're talking about our mathematics curriculum for all students. We have to serve the needs of our children who are very advanced in mathematics. From the child we have who may be in the third grade who is now doing algebra to the child we have who struggles with mathematics even as they get into high school. And our approaches and our curriculum have to address all of those students. And so that's one of the challenges I think that we've asked the task force to look at is how do we do that? How do we have a curriculum that addresses everybody in the way that they need to be addressed? So that's also an important part of that. So if anybody has any questions of Jim and Merle about their background or anything, we'd be glad to take those at this time.
Superintendent, I just want to ask you, are there other school districts involved? And there's obviously, this is our task force.
This is just us.
But has any other school districts asked to be a part of this or heard about this and said, you know, geez, boy, we'd really like to.
No, this is really just us and looking at us. Now, our belief is that what we learn here about us will, in fact, inform some of the national debate one way or the other. My commitment as superintendent here is that whatever this task force says is I will commit my successor to follow through with. I realized that today. I know why this didn't go into my head before. It just didn't.
Oh, sure.
I've never been in a situation. Well, it didn't. that actually we'll get to the end of this and then somebody else will have to worry about it. But I really think we need to be, as an administration, we really need to be committed to taking the results of this seriously. My goal is that we're doing the best we can for our kids. If that's not what we're doing now, then we need to change. If it is what we're doing now, then we need to do it better. So that's really kind of the underlying thing. Any other questions?
Ms. Pythagoras.
This is not a question. I would just like to thank the two gentlemen for their time this morning and their insights and their grace under some very direct and pointed questions I was asking. I have to say that I was very, very impressed and pleased with your comments, your insights. Some of the questions you asked us were I felt right on target, and I feel very, very positive about the direction that this project will take under your leadership.
Thank you.
Ms. Rivera?
I'm sorry. Ms. Pathak?
I would actually, unless I'm preempting, are we going to duel over the motion?
No, go ahead.
I yield to Ms. Rivera, and then I would like to make the motion.
And Mr.
Since
Kyle,
I give them such a rough time this morning.
And Mr. Kyle Smith also has a question or a comment he'd like to.
I wanted to echo what Ms. Mathiak said. I went to the meeting this morning with a number of questions, and I came away after the meeting with a lot of answers, very comfortable and very excited about the direction that this task force is going. I appreciate the time you took to explain your philosophy on how you think you'll be working with the board and how you're coming back to the board for input at any of the branch points, and how you think it's very important that as a board we represent the community, and you're very interested in also learning about the school district's community. I think one thing that I thought was very positive was I think your roles also as facilitators. As we go through and we list the things that are going to be important to us in this study, I think that you'll be very valuable in kind of broadening our horizons and, you know, asking the questions to expand our thought process into what this project really could be. So I appreciate you taking the time to do this. I think it's going to be an exciting project.
Thank you.
Mr. Kyle Smith.
I'm also very excited as to the direction and philosophy of this task force. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you plan to involve the students in the process and get student input.
Well, as an initial comment, one thing that I believe both Merle and I would hope happens is that if you appoint us and want this project to go forward, and especially if you have the NSF funding that enables it, that there is a conversation with the board that we be as certain as possible that we understand the things that are important to you, both in terms of process and in terms of the kinds of questions that you want to have. There should be a discussion where you first tell us what's important, and if you want us to offer suggestions as to questions we might pursue, we offer them. So I don't go into this with any preconceived notion other than it is important to understand the perspective of students. It is important to understand the perspective of the teachers who teach in your school district, and it is important to understand the citizens who support the school district. And so we want to go through an information collecting phase, and this Wisconsin Center for Educational Research may advise us that it is best to take surveys, it is best to have them do focus group discussions with groups of students. It is best to have an open period where anyone who wants to can come in and talk, and that it isn't just highly organized. So a lot of the details of that need to be planned. We don't come into it with the notion this has to happen, and we do want it, any decisions that are made, to be made after we listen to what's important to the board. The same for the questions. I have this enormous fear of responding on some level to your charge and still not giving you the information you want, so that if now and at some future board meeting when you ask us to come back, if there were discussions that gave opportunities for someone to say, here's what's really important to me. You know, I have a special interest here, or I have a hunch, but I want to know whether this hunch is on target or not. Here's what I think is the case, so that through rather specific questions and comments, we gain an understanding of things that of necessity must be a part of the process.
I would
I would concur also that we view the board as our clients in terms of the specific questions that they would have, but I just in hearing some of the deliberation here this evening know that the board views students as probably the most important client in the system. So as we look at those factors that are necessary for success, and I mentioned completion of algebra, geometry, but we could go beyond that to advance mathematics and ability to be admitted to and be successful post-secondary at the university level. I think, as Jim said, it would be important if we have the capacity with surveys and focus groups to hear from students about what they feel are the important elements of their preparation, things that worked for them, and maybe things that they would like to see future students have.
Well, I appreciate that. I think that during this information collecting period, as you said, you're hoping to understand the full extent of the board's questions and the direction the board wants you to go, and also the questions of the students and the input of the students. I would hope that throughout the process that the task force goes through, that it commits itself to working directly with the students, not just through the board. I think it's important to gain the direct input rather than having it filtered through the board's idea as to where they want the task force to go.
Just real quick, can you conceptualize, Superintendent, any way that we get involved, the student senate at all, and if that's what you're... I mean, that would be the direct link to students.
Well,
through on the board.
A lot of the work that I imagine the task force will be doing will not be of much interest to many students. And so, I do not advocate, for example, a student member on the task force, but I believe working in direct contact with students, perhaps through the student senate or through focus groups. Any kind of direct contact is certainly a necessity.
Superintendent.
Well, I mean, conceptually at this point, we are at the point to know that the task force, and I think they said that clearly today, needs to have a methodology to gain the views of students, gain the views of parents, gain the views of our teachers who are on the ground teaching children. How that plays out and what that looks like is what's dynamic about the task force. They need to. We're fortunate in Madison to have the Wisconsin Center for Educational Research that's involved with this, and they have people who do this kind of specific research in terms of how you really elicit information from various kinds of people, and we certainly have the survey group at the University of Wisconsin. We have access to all those people. So as this goes forward. That will come from the task force in terms of we talk to people. Here's the way we know we need to get this input. Here's the way we recommend getting the input, and that will come from people who really are experts in how you gain this kind of information.
Ms. Carson, followed by Ms. Mathag, who would like to make the motion.
Yes, I did want to thank both of you for coming to Madison and spending some time educating us, and I also wanted to tell the rest of the board that. The meeting this morning included a number of the other people who will be on the task force, as well as some of the people who will be doing some of the research. And it's a very impressive group, I think. And I was really quite excited about the potential for some information that I think will be very helpful to us and to the community ultimately as we kind of struggle with where we are trying to go and what's the best way. But I really do think the group that's been assembled is outstanding.
Ms. Pathak.
Before I make the motion, I would just like to observe that when I was running for office a little over a year ago, one of my last campaign debates was at Madison East High School. And it was just Mr. Lopez and I, and what was the first question we were asked by the students who had organized the debate? Because after all, our students do vote. First question was, what is your opinion of the math curriculum? Now, there's some ironies there, including the fact that I am notoriously phobic about mathematics, which you may not have understood from my questions earlier today. But I think that there are lots of ways and a lot of interest in participating from students, not just the Student Senate, but students in at large at many levels. And I thank you, Joe, for raising that issue and bringing it forward, because I the first rule of communications is know your audience, and what more important audience do we have than the students who we're trying to educate? So thank you. With that, I would like to move, Mr. President, if I could.
Absolutely.
I will make a motion that the Board of Education approve the following composition of the Task Force on Mathematics in the Madison Metropolitan School District. As co-chairs, Mr. Jim Lewis from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln and Mr. Merle Price from California State University Northridge as co-chairs. And then the following task force members: Norman Webb, mathematics educator and evaluator; Martha Alabali, a cognitive scientist; David Griffith, mathematician; Eric Knuth, math education researcher; Mitchell Nathan, a cognitive scientist; Ken Zeichner, university teacher education expert; and then still to be named, a K-12 teacher and parent of Madison Metropolitan School District student.
I'll second that motion.
We have a motion. We have a second by Ms. Rivera. Discussion? Ms. Cole?
You got to turn that. Okay. I was there today as a friendly observer until I get sworn in. And I had a few questions, and I just wanted to go over kind of my perception so far, because I am new to the board. I wanted to give you some context in Madison as far as why this task force came about. I think it's really important because being someone that's newly elected, I kind of have been in the trenches, so to speak. I'm a parent of three kids that are in elementary school. The context is such that you know about No Child Left Behind, of course, and all the high-stakes testing. But in Madison, we have a lot of folks that get agitated when it comes to their education of their kids. And there is a struggle going on in our district when it comes to deciding how much resources we invest in pure education or the theory of math education and mathematics in general. We have a lot of people, and I've spoken with a lot of people that are trained engineers, mathematicians, lots of university professors, and they really come down hard because some of them are parents onto the school district. And so one thing that I was hearing from the audience seats, one reason why we had this task force is that as a board, it becomes very difficult, as you know, to tease apart all these different pieces when it comes to how do we define student success. Earlier today, you really got to the meat of some of this stuff, and I'd like, if you could, to share some of your past experiences. In Madison, our demographics are changing so drastically that it's very hard for some of us to get a grip on how we differentiate, how we educate kids in the classroom that are basically a very broad extreme, from ELL to ESL to kids that, believe it or not, do well in algebra in third grade. And for us as board members, we don't want to select curriculum, but we sure do want to evaluate it and assess it and figure out where we need to be putting our resources. And I can see that some of that is addressed there, but I think it would be helpful for me as a board member to for you to elaborate just a little bit further on some of the things that you shared, especially the fact that you did already study some school districts, and we need some outside advice, and that's why you're here.
I'll speak to the school district where I was in charge of instructional programs until a couple of years ago. And at the elementary level, there was more than one textbook option, although the standards drove those textbook publishers, whether it was Scott Forsman, McDougall, Eitel, Prentice Hall, etc. But the district had to define a pacing and sequence of what teachers learned and also a professional development plan. But the achievement data that we had to digest, and we have in Los Angeles a very strong program evaluation review branch that has expertise similar to what we see at WCER, with the ability to really crunch the data and look at patterns over time, value added that particular teachers and programs have. Some of the other factors that affected, and we did have gains in mathematics in elementary, largely attributed to more defined time for students to learn mathematics. That is, there hadn't been prescribed schedules before, so there was basically more time on task. But teaching experience was a major factor at the elementary level. The kinds of professional development that teachers were engaged in, the closer it was to the school site, meaning the more opportunities that teachers by grade level had to meet together with some facilitated expertise, and we have a coaching system that was funded in Los Angeles, had a lot to do, as did the kind of leadership that existed on the campus to provide a culture where teachers felt that they were constantly learning. They weren't threatened by assessment systems that were internal. They didn't feel in certain schools that they were being evaluated based upon a result, but could learn and grow. And those were the schools with the greater gains. In secondary, there were some additional factors. The major one in grade 6 through 12 was whether or not the teacher majored in mathematics, and especially at the middle school level, where the content knowledge was less, where in the credentialing system in California, with very few math units, someone could get an emergency credential at that time. Now with NCLB, there has been some added rigor, but we had a lot of teachers, and still do, who are lacking in some content knowledge, and where they are the majority of the department, we had the weakest performance in our middle schools. Another factor, and we're a district with 40% English learners, a predominant Latino population, the English proficiency of students was directly related to math achievement. There are some other issues that we could discuss, but those are the major points that I wanted to make. As far as other school districts I've worked with, you know, we're looking at a lot of things. There's some high potential in a program that has come out of Austin, Texas, Agile Mind, a technology-based support to teachers that teachers can use in the classroom. But I think it would be premature even on the task force, much less here to talk in detail about that, because it may be that there are programs and systems and supports within your district that we're not aware of that are equal or superior to that. But there are, you know, I'm just saying there are some promising things that appear to be technology based, but there's some very specific components also to what would make that work, and it's resource intensive also.
Ms. Moss.
Hi. I'm sorry I couldn't make the meetings this morning, so you may have already covered this. I was wondering, when you're asking what we want to know from you, or what are our questions for this process, when do we start formulating that, or when do you want to know that?
I think the answer is whenever it works for the different demands on your time. For example, if your schedule has time for a conversation right now, we're here and we're all ears.
Okay.
If you would rather us come back after the grant is in hand.
Okay, so that's right now you want us to ask you all the questions that we have about.
Art made a suggestion earlier that maybe you might say one or two things that's really important to you, and then collectively, if a number of people do that, we're going to get a sense of the richness. But coming from the outside, we don't come into this with any understanding, let's say, of the relative importance that you might attach to whether graduates of your school district go on with success to be engineers and scientists at UW, or that you are much more interested in closing performance gaps between majority and minority students, or that you see no reason that these thoughts are in conflict with each other, and you believe that with the right approach there can be a win-win system that moves both forward, that level of fine detail that understands things that are important, and that you would be disappointed if there's not information provided in our report that helps you on those issues.
Okay.
And you will have other chances. I mean, the idea tonight really was just what's two things that really drive you in terms of what you're concerned about with math and you want to know. Then we're going to have to get down to what, when we have the grant, we're going to have to get down to some very specific research questions, because the way the charge is phrased right now, it's really not researchable the way it is. The goals are good, they're broad, and we'll get research questions that allow you to find out that information. But the board, and Jim and Merle will work with the board to craft some very specific research questions to find out some very specific things. I think that's a step after this. This is really just to give them an idea of what's on your mind. If you would.
First of all, and it looks like we're getting ready to kind of jump into some bigger conversations, which I think is number five, which I believe people are kind of leading
you
into.
I want to approve them.
Yeah, let's vote on the task force members first, if people don't mind. Mr. Kyle Smith, your advisory vote?
Aye.
The rest of the board, all those in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Yeah. Yep, number five, again, I will turn the meeting back over to the superintendent, and it sounds like this is the direction that people want to go, but I do want to acknowledge Ms. Robarts, who had her hand raised. Ms. Robarts.
I don't care where you start.
Well, if you go ahead.
One of the questions I've had has to do maybe with the scope of what you'll be looking at. I'm certainly not a mathematician, but in reading various studies of high-performing, high-poverty, high-minority schools, one of the things that the researchers, at least ones I've seen, tend to point out is there's also significance to, or there can be, the amount of time that students have to work on the project. Our elementary school day is a very crowded day, a very short day, in my opinion. Our high school and middle schools have, you know, time limitations. And what I'm wondering is, as you're looking at, I mean, it makes sense, obviously, to look at what is the type of curriculum and what is the training and expertise level of staff, but are you going to be constrained by, say, for example, our current elementary, middle, and high school time commitments to math, or would you feel free to recommend not only a different curriculum, but maybe a different amount of time, say in the elementary grades for math?
I would think that we're probably the greatest constraint might be that one has to avoid the danger of trying to be all things to all people and end up so diffuse that we don't do anything of quality that helps you. But what you have identified, the importance of time on task, mm-hmm. and how much that might impact your ability to be successful in mathematics. Now, it is later and it is appropriate discussion for the board as to are you willing to pay the price, for example, to cut out this in order to have our district focus on reading.
I understand. We'd be talking about collective bargaining issues and about economic issues, but In looking at find Delta Camp, and not too long ago had a study of a suburban district about a year ago, a suburban district outside of New York that found that one of the ways to raise the Regent math scores for African American students was to give them a high-level class with all other students, plus a sort of workshop help class, plus a math club after school. And in doing that, I mean, it wasn't clear to me. It seems to me that there's a logical connection between the additional time, between the exposure to the whole range of, you know, both the more difficult and the whatever remedial problems an individual kid has, and, you know, what... Clearly, you could do it three times a day with a bad curriculum, and it wouldn't help you much. But it seems to me that I would want at least the... I'm not going to be here, but I would want, as a community member, this issue to get dealt with in some fashion, because I think without that, it's hard to make a real assessment of how much more we should put into teacher training as opposed to, say, more time on task.
I'll comment that Merle and I both know, and I believe UW has something at the college level called an Emergent Scholars Program. The one that we have at Nebraska, by having 2 hours of 4 hours of recitation a week rather than 2 hours in calculus, the students who are in those recitation sections make one letter grade higher than the other students in calculus, even though they're all attending the same faculty lectures. That's a big variable.
Others who wish to speak?
So are we all giving our two issues?
I guess we're just...
One or two, yeah. whatever you would like for them to be thinking about as they're starting to think about some research questions to bring back to you.
No, yeah, are we constrained by time? I mean, if we get a question tomorrow, we can get it to you and you can get
Absolutely.
It to them. I mean, that's...
Absolutely.
Okay.
I would hope that you'd be given our email addresses and you'd want send us messages whenever you want to. Yeah.
And you can send it directly to them.
So we're not just constrained by tonight.
No,
you've
this
got
is,
to brainstorm.
This is really just a starting point, so they've got a feel for kind of where you are.
Ms. Cupson.
One of the things that I've heard, especially at the elementary and middle school level, is that with the type of math we use now, that it's very language-based, and that for students that have trouble in reading, that prevents them, or the hurdle in them doing well in math. And so parents who have a student like that may say, before my child was doing well in math, now with the new math program, because they're not a good reader, they're not doing well. So I would be really interested in seeing something about those ties and whether and how the curriculum fits with that, because, of course, I mean, from my perspective, the last thing you want to do is have a student be unsuccessful in two areas. But so that's one issue of concern. And then just you mentioned the issue about being all things to all people. I do think in the high school we do need to have a goal of having our students be able to be prepared for whatever they want to go on to do. And so that doesn't mean, it may mean that there are different paths for different kids in the high school level, because you may want to have someone who goes into engineering or something else, and other kids interested in a different profession that isn't as math-based. So I would like to see at least that option for paths that work for both sets of students.
Ms. Severe.
I'll tie into Ms. Cubs' last comments when you asked earlier about being all things to all people. I do think it's very important that we do look for a curriculum or plan that does address the need for our diverse community. I think closing the achievement gap is certainly tremendously important, but I do not believe we can do that at the expense of our high achievers or the children in the middle. I'd be interested in assessment tools that we can use to determine if, you know, as we go forward, if our programs are successful beyond just the WKCE, and, you know, how we really determine the effectiveness of what we're doing. Is it a language issue? Is it an attendance issue? Is whatever the case may be there. And so that assessment and how we can use that going forward is important to me. And I think we talked about it earlier today. We were in the meeting. Is tracking the effectiveness of our programs once the student leaves the Madison Metropolitan School District, whether no matter what their path is, have we truly prepared them for whatever they want to do? And how can we gather that information? And then my final thought is, you know, as we go through and start evaluating all of the different subgroups, I think we also have to be aware that, especially in the elementary level, that you know, different schools do things differently right now. There's not necessarily a set consistent curriculum across the board. And so we have to, I think, weigh that when we're looking at or tracking how our programs are working right now or not.
Mr. Vang, followed by Ms. Moss, followed by Ms. Mathak.
I don't know if we are already doing this in the district, but as a board member and pretty soon a private citizen, I'll have kids in all three level, elementary, middle school, and high school. And I would be interested in having a math program that is consistent so that when my kids leave elementary school and go to middle school, that there is a he, well, right now it will be a she, who she's going to be able to make that connection from what she learned in fifth grade to sixth. And that when her little brother comes in, she's going to be able to, even if they go to a different school, there's going to be some consistency across the district. So that, and at the same time, I know that you said we cannot be everything to everybody, but I think as a board member, that's what I'm looking for is how can we do that and at the same time still maintain an excellent program. And as a person, I would want a program that addresses almost every need that we have, every challenges that we have high expectations for not only the high achievers, but high expectations for the lowest achievers. And how can we have a program where we can coach, train, mentor our teachers so that they have that same, I think it doesn't necessarily have to be math, and it may be more of a district approach on expectations for our kids, but if we could do that and have it consistent across the board, that's what I would envision the type of math that I want for my kids.
May I ask a follow-up question of Mr. Vang or any of the board members? Is there interest because of movement of students from school to school at a particular level of having consistency? I come from a district where we regionalized the adoption so that students moving from school to school where we have a lot of transiency wouldn't be experiencing a whole different program at the same grade level. Is that an issue here?
For me, it is, but at the same time, I also hear from some teachers, different math programs, that at some point you want to allow that program to have some flexibility to work with students who have different learning styles. But overall, I would like to see some consistency.
Mobility is an issue.
It is an issue.
Yeah, we do have a relatively high mobility, both within the district and also externally with our kids leaving, other kids coming in. But even within the district, there's a relatively high mobility compared to a lot of school districts.
Yeah, our district also has a high proportion of special education students, and like Ms. Cobbs has said, our elementary curriculum and the middle school curriculum is very language-based, and that's of a concern to me. I have a son with autism, and I know that that's a very difficult curriculum even to differentiate for children with autism or with language processing disorders. And so I would really like for you to see or to look at how successful we're being with that. I think in the elementary level, especially in the classes that have the smaller class size, that we're doing a good job with that because the children can be broken into smaller groups. But we're looking at raising class size as a possibility in some of our elementary schools in this next budget cycle. And I think it'll be interesting to see if you can compare how successful those classrooms are with the math and how it looks in the classrooms that are still at the 15-to-1 ratio. The other part for me is the math specialist. You were talking about it earlier that you saw that in your in the district that you've studied, that there's a difficulty in finding math specialists at the middle school, and that's kind of where it breaks down. And I think that we may have a similar situation here in Madison. And those are my kind of three major concerns.
First of all, I want to echo what the last two speakers said. I, in fact, am the parent of a child with a language learning disability, and when you were talking about the ELL students, my thought was actually for students with language processing disorders, it is an ELL issue, because if you cannot read the problems, if you have trouble sequencing or processing the language, then what is required of you is completely out of your grasp. And so I too would, and I've heard this from tutors as well. So it's an area that I'm interested in, and if there is in fact an issue or a correlation between difficulties with math and language deficits, I'd be interested to hear what we could do differently, because I think to not have math is to be shut out of so much in life. And that comes to the second part of what I want to say, and that is this is really at the heart of what I'm concerned about. My children are now, I'm about to be an empty nester. I have one who is off the charts in terms of his mathematical abilities, and I have one who has struggled with math because of a language disorder. And so when I look at what we're doing and what we're trying to achieve here, my questions come down to how do our students fare, whether they're in a traditional type of curriculum, algebra, pre-algebra, or a CGI Core Plus curriculum, how do they fare when they move from middle to high school? I've talked with parents whose kids have done the connected math in middle school and then hit a brick wall when they tried to do algebra in high school. I don't know if that's anecdotal, but I'd like to know if that is an issue. And then what happens when they transition from high school to any kind of post-secondary education, and not just university. I don't know if anybody told you this, but the largest feeder school for UW-Madison is MATC, Madison Area Technical College. So we want to know, how do they do? If they come out of a Core Plus curriculum, are they able to function in a post-secondary setting? And similarly, is there any relationship between the type of curriculum we're implementing for math and how students fare in science?
Sorry.
Tired of EMT, don't worry.
She's having a moment over here. How does success in math and math concepts impact the ability to succeed in other areas? Because, again, I'm hearing anecdotal evidence that at the high school level, a lot of kids drop out of science after chemistry because they're struggling with the math that you would need to do chemistry and physics. So it's another area of concern for me, in part because, as you surely know from your experience with higher education, the admissions processes are so incredibly competitive today that it is not plausible to graduate without advanced math and science and get into even some of our state universities are becoming incredibly selective. So those are some of my concerns of what happens after that 12th year.
Might I ask whether the district purchases everyday math in Spanish? Everyday math is supposed to be available in Spanish. Do y'all get it in Spanish for language learners?
Whomever's answering that.
I honestly don't know. Let me find out.
If somebody's answering that question, could they come to the microphone? Then.
Hi. We have several elementary schools that have bilingual sections in their elementary schools. And in those classrooms, there are dual books. And so everyday math is translated in Spanish. So we do have Spanish books. We have Spanish books, and the teachers both speak Spanish and English in those classes.
A follow-up on the science relationship. Is it the traditional biology, chemistry, physics sequence? And are those grades 9, 10, 11, or 10, 11, 12? 9, 10, 11. Okay. Thank you.
Did Mr. Sniff want to speak as well?
Ryan and Jeff, let me just say, would you like to address the science?
I just wanted to add that at the middle school, I know the Connected Math is also purchased in Spanish as well. So,
the question is the sequence for science at high school, is that correct? Three of our high schools begin with ninth grade biology as the introductory course. One of our high schools, it is an integrated science program. Generally, this second year is for those that are in biology, it would move on to either earth science or chemistry. At one of our high schools, physics is the recommended second year. So we do have some diversity in the sequence. Chemistry and physics are generally the upper electives.
Are there requirements in math that are prerequisite to chemistry or physics, like algebra, before they take chemistry or physics?
Yes. I don't have the exact details on what the math courses are, but algebra is generally required, yes.
Ms. Mathag, I think you might have something you want to respond.
Well, I just wanted to ask Ms. Wachtel a question because I've talked to parents whose children were in Core Plus, so do you count that as an algebra requirement? Because their children certainly have taken chemistry. That's precisely why I'm asking the question I am.
Yeah, I'm going to defer to Grant Gadel, who's much more up to speed on the particular requirements for the Core Plus.
Yes, Core 1 is sufficient to take chemistry. At East, at least. I do not know at West. I taught 5 years at East, so I can talk to that end. And 2 years of core is sufficient to get into physics at East.
I know it's sufficient, but what do we know about student success? Because, again, I'm hearing from a number of people, including people who have spent time at East. I'm an East parent. I've talked to parents. And trust me, The anecdotal, and this is exactly why I'd like a neutral and unbiased review and an attempt to find out whether this is just anecdotal in one or two cases, or in fact students are, by the time they would hit the level, junior year typically is when kids take physics, you're seeing the kids who took Core Plus withdrawing from science. And if that is happening, if it's happening, I don't know that it is, but that would be a concern for me. It's not enough to say you can get into the class. You have to be able to succeed in the class. Yeah.
Mr. Lewis and Mr. Price, you got that information then? Okay. Thank you. Ms. Carstensen, followed by Ms. Severa, followed by Ms. Kubza.
To go back to what our questions are, I think my basic issue is what do we need to... What kind of a program do we need to ensure that kids across the entire spectrum can succeed in math? And beyond that, I am I really would like to know, or to think in terms of, how do we create a culture within our district where math is not considered a difficult subject, but something that kids and teachers regard as something that, you know, they can be successful at, that it can be fun to do, that sort of thing.
Ms. Severa, followed by Ms. Kubza.
One last comment. When you're setting up evaluations of the subgroups, I the first thing will be to look at our different groups and what is working, but I think, and what's not working. But I think it's going to be important to set up, and I don't know how to do this, but to set up evaluations so that we know if this is not working, we have to go somewhere else, where that somewhere else will be. And so that you can help us with that process of looking at other options or looking at other curricula and how those may or may not address our needs. I think it's important to tie in with something that Carol said, that not only is wherever we go, you know, enjoyable for our students, but also, you know, we have to have the community buy-in. So the more support information, or the more we can build that evaluation or direction up front, I think better off we'll be in the long run.
Could I ask a question of clarification of the charge? There's a reference in the charge, an overview of math curricula, including Madison's math curricula. That could conceivably be interpreted as, tell us about other curricula and compare it with what we use. And that is potentially somewhat open-ended. Was that what was intended, or was it am I misreading it?
Well, let's talk about it. Ms. Bathag, Ms. Kubza, Ms. Severa, Ms. Robart, Mr. Bathag, everyone.
If I recall discussions, I think the intent of the goal was not just to focus on what Madison does and is it working or is it not working, but are there other options that also can address our needs? And we wanted the goal open-ended enough to evaluate those other options and, again, not just focus internally on what we're doing. So that's what I was getting at with my comment. If there are other options out there that could potentially address our needs, let's set this up in such a way that we're, you know, evaluating how those will work from the start. So it was expanding beyond our internal selves.
Does anyone else have?
I think one of the sort of things I'd offer up, and it's been a while since we put this together, yeah, so you'll have to excuse us if we're a little bit fuzzy on exactly, you know, what we were thinking. But when I think of that part of the charge, what comes to mind are two things. One is that Madison is somewhat unique in that we develop our own curriculum. So it is not an off-the-shelf Prentice Hall or other McGraw-Hill, whatever, off-the-shelf curriculum. So how it compares to other curriculum is sort of a question. And I'm not saying it's good, bad, or indifferent. I'm just saying that
in math, a lot of ours comes off the shelf. We do what Merle described as the teaching guides or whatever, in terms of how you use this. But we do use more off the shelf in math than we do most of the other things.
Okay, then I was confused by the teaching and learning presentation a few weeks ago, because I really thought we were developing our own curriculum. But okay, be that as it may, in some of the community input and debate, as you've probably experienced yourselves, you get a lot of recommendations. There are people who desperately want Singapore math, the people who desperately want, one of my sons went through a Saxon program. There are all sorts of math models. And I don't know that I expect this task force to resolve, you know, it's like, what is the meaning of life? And the answer is 42.
That's not what we're looking for. What we're really looking for is that sort of assistance from people who think about what kids need to know and how you teach it, how you effectively teach it, and how these different models stack up. Because nobody at this table, unless the people who are leaving plan to go out and volunteer in the schools, is going to be in a classroom teaching math anytime soon. But it is helpful as a board member when a parent comes forward or a group of parents to know what they're talking about, to know what the strengths and weaknesses are, and to know what the ramifications are when we adopt a particular curricular approach.
Just a brief follow-up. One of my understandings about some of the support that the central math team provides to, let's say, elementary schools in the form of the notebook with aligned lessons or activities is that that they're, whatever the curriculum is, it has to be based upon the Wisconsin standards and hopefully aligned to WKCE. So I'm not sure that there's an off-the-shelf curriculum, or if we look at other curricula, that there wouldn't need to be supplemental materials to cover all of the Wisconsin standards. It's unlikely that a text approved in Texas or California is going to fit exactly the Wisconsin standards.
Again, I think that certainly my understanding of what we were given in a presentation a couple weeks ago was a little different from what I'm hearing tonight. So that's less of an issue for me.
Ms. Kubza.
A couple of things. I do think what comes back needs to at least have something about other math programs. If what comes back is this is what you do, this is the strengths and weaknesses of what you do, it won't be successful from my view. It really does need to say, it needs to look at what else is out there and whether what we're doing is the best for us. And so it may be open-ended, but that's, I think, the intent, because we need to feel that we're on the right path, and it's just how do we make it work even better. A couple of other things. Lucy mentioned that MATC was the biggest feeder school to the UW-Madison. That's a good resource for you, the Madison Area Technical College in Madison, because they do have information, I think, on the testing of kids that come into the school and what if they need remedial courses in math, and I know that is offered. And so they can, I think, the people at MATC can give you a lot of information about how the kids come into math. One of the things they've said is that something they see is if the kid didn't take math in the last year or last 2 years of high school, you know, there's been a huge drop-off when they go into the tech school. But that's just a really good resource for you. Another issue that came up in East High School had to do with ninth graders in algebra. And algebra is mandated for our ninth graders in Madison. And I think what we see is that some students have difficulty finishing the full algebra class in 1 year. And so if there's no mechanism to really deal with that. So then if they don't do that, then they're in a, you know, they've been unsuccessful and they have to try to take the full course again. So that would be something you've got.
I'm, of course, almost freeing to not be ignorant. Do y'all have any programs where students who are anticipated to go have greater trouble just to plan for 2 years to make algebra successful?
We do some double classes in I think almost all of our high schools now that some of our algebra is two periods rather than one. And it's a little bit different in each school, but generally a period and a support period. I don't know if we still have anybody that does algebra in 2 years or not. Do you?
Lisa, Yes, the Memorial does have a two-year program for students to take algebra over 2 years. La Follette and East have support classes that students can take. West did have a support class, but it was cut due to budget concerns.
I just want to ask a quick question just in terms of increasing, say, the standards. We've talked, I think the governor has talked about increasing math and science standards.
Actually, the number of classes you have to take.
Yeah, yeah, number of
standards. Yeah, number
okay,
of
I'm
classes.
Sorry. Actually, the number of classes. We didn't do that. We didn't do that in terms of increase. We couldn't because of budget constraints.
The governor has proposed it a couple of times. I honestly don't even recall if it's ever come to a vote. As of right now, 2 years of math and 2 years of science are what are required. The governor's proposed several times doing three required. That has not passed in our state. And I think we look today, a lot of our kids do take 3 and 4 years, but it's not a required graduation requirement. But that's what the governor's proposal was.
Can we look at that in terms of the task force as well and what that might look like in terms of increasing the number of years?
And there's nothing that prevents our board from doing that. The state, the way Wisconsin works, the state sets the minimum graduation requirements, and then a board of education is perfectly free to establish whatever additional you want to do.
I'll comment that in 1991, the University of Nebraska required 4 years of mathematics as an entrance requirement to the university to try to inspire the state's high schools to get students to take more mathematics. And I apparently popularized throughout the state the phrase, if you're not busy learning math, you're busy forgetting it. And so I'm a very strong believer that in terms of college readiness and success in life, the fact that some students are not taking math their senior year, at whatever level they're at, if you could cause more students to take more mathematics, you would have much greater success in the high school.
The new default graduation requirements in the Los Angeles Unified School District presented by a board that was very concerned about opportunities to learn and discrepancies from one school to another. So all of our students now, in order just to get a high school diploma, must take 3 years of college prep math, 3 years of laboratory science. You might want to follow how that comes out. The model that board had was San Jose, California, which is in its fifth or sixth year of having adopted such standards, and they do have some impressive data on how they haven't increased their dropout rates, and in fact they have higher performance and more students going on to university, but that's anecdotal.
Okay. Can we hear about that then? I mean, if you put that in a report someplace?
The concern I would have is that I think there are a number of ideas, or I don't know if recommendations is a strong word, that would have fiscal implications. We talked about use of time. For example, recommending that for struggling students that they have 2 hours or whatever, or even there are some impressive examples where bridge programs coming out of middle school where students spend the summer, for example, in preparation for algebra and Reed Treisman, working with Chicago schools, has something that looks impressive. But those would all carry costs with them, so I'm not sure how many of those things you want to have in a report that would cost a lot of money.
I think time, which was the initial issue that you raised, this is another version of time, time on task.
Ms. Kosler?
Well, and the status quo has costs too. I mean, to the extent we're putting more and more dollars into coaching to develop a particular kind of math and so forth, There's no neutral answer from you. I'm just hopeful that you will be able to help the board with the kind of question Lori
We can't consider said. That, but there are some other issues, too, like increasing the amount of time students have with a qualified mathematics teacher means that you need more mathematics teachers. Yes. I'm not sure if you have a shortage of qualified teachers. We do in California. But
we do also.
I guess one of my hopes would be some of those kinds of things will at least come out of this report in a prioritized way. You know, some things you can't afford, but you need to know, sort of back to Ms. Cubs's question, or I think the community needs to know, not just how are we doing or what is the ideal math curriculum, but for the community we are right now, is this the best approach? What would be the best approach? Where does the current approach fit as opposed to some ideal scale of what should be done with the kids we have, we are.
I'll just put on my high school principal's hat that if with the same resources I was going to have to increase numbers of math sections, then you struggle with, are we going to then cut the arts, the, you know, all of the other programs?
Well,
and I think those are difficult.
I was a high school principal too, appreciate that. and I'm not asking you to make that choice for us, but you know, or for the board, but also not to preclude a variety of comparisons that are important for people to hear. And that may be one of them, you know, that there are costs to, that part of what we're doing now is constrained in X ways by costs and how to fit that into a scale.
Purely as an aside, and something that Merrill mentioned a little bit earlier, we are just in the beginning stages. As a matter of fact, Brian and Lisa were at a meeting this past week. We're in the beginning stages of a fairly large grant with Wisconsin Center for Educational Research, a group called SERP, which includes Uri Trassman that was just mentioned, in terms of looking at, and it doesn't matter what kind of curriculum you do with this, but looking at this type of bridge program between the 8th and 9th grade for children who are going to struggle, where it actually addresses not just the mathematics, but also a lot of the psychology that I think Ms. Mathiak mentioned a bit earlier. There's a whole psychology around children and their confidence in doing math that bridge program addresses, and it also, we're also included in that with looking at the kind of technology support, Agile Mind being one. There's a Carnegie Mellon one that's the same kind of thing that's part of a grant that we've applied for with Arlington, Virginia, Shaker Heights, Ohio, Evanston, Illinois, ourselves, SERP, from Goldman Sachs to fund that effort in terms of beginning to look at how we do those kind of things, which regardless of how you're teaching math are important pieces to all this. So.
Ms. Carl Smith, followed by Ms. Cole, followed by Ms. Moss.
Going off what people have been saying about exploring different curricula and encouraging students to take more math, I can only speak for the West High math program, but I know that one of the grievances I hear from my friends, not as a student representative, but simply as a student, is that the program is specific to one type of learning style, and one type of student learns very well from the math program, and that's the type of student who has the concentration to sit through a lecture that is oftentimes just the teacher reading out of the book or writing on the board what is in the book, essentially. And I have nothing but respect for the math teachers in the math program at West, but I know that a lot of students don't respond to this type of teaching. And if you could see my math class, especially Fridays, let me tell you. But so I would be especially supportive and would especially encourage the task force to explore curriculas that look at different ways to tailor the math curriculum to different learning styles. Because I think one of the reasons is that students aren't more excited about math and take opportunities to not take it if given them, is that what can happen in the math program, at least in high schools, is that students will learn what they need to, often self-taught, in order to do well on the upcoming test and immediately forget it. And the turnaround for the forgetful rate of the math is actually astonishing, in terms of, we're talking days.
It's supposed to be the length of the hallway.
After the test.
So different curricula that can maybe work with different learning styles to cement the mathematics knowledge in the students' minds.
Ms. Cole.
There we go. When it comes down to what I'm trying to get out of this, being a new member, I'm very interested in looking at kids post-secondary. You know, where are they going? I want to make sure that we have a good idea of are we preparing our kids, like some others have said, for a successful life, whatever that is. I want them to graduate with a set of skills that they can move forward. And given that, I really feel that in the context of Madison, that we need to make sure that we're inviting whoever it is to the table, to the task force early on, and not as a second thought. So I encourage you to contact MATC and other business leaders. You know, we have major business corporations in Madison. Ms. Silvera knows about some. And I think it's really important that we do that because, on one hand, we are educating our future workforce. And it looks a lot different than it did when we were educating everyone to be farmers. So, and given that fact, I think it's also very important that we at least address the technology aspect of it. Someone had mentioned that. We're in the process right now of instituting a virtual learning, and I just want you to be aware of it, that there are already wheels in motion to look at courses that are going to be online and so forth in math, and I'm not sure where else. But I don't want to get too far in that process without looking at what's going to work for us. I think of this as steering the ship, and we're here to make sure we steer the ship in the right direction. And it's very hard for me to get a handle right now on what how you would go about assessing professional development and what would that look like, you know, when you're inputting professional development and you have this binder that's for elementary teachers, and we've kind of already developed this and it's highly successful and there's a lot of buy-in. Do we want that same kind of model for middle school? Do we want that same kind of model for high school? Is that where we're going to put our resources? Because right now we're on the cusp as a district to start developing, if I believe it's correct, you know, another model, that same model of this binder that will be for middle school and high school. And we're in this situation right now as a school district where we are cutting courses and so forth. And if there's strong evidence that math content gives you high achievement in middle school, then maybe that's where we need to put our resources into right now until we change funding. I'm very interested in closing achievement gap, and I'd like to know what measures we can use, specific measures when it comes to disaggregating the data. I don't want to find out secondhand that what our dropout rates are or the fact that we have kids taking a course but never completing a course. I feel it's very important that we come up with standards and policy in place. And then finally, it comes down to this interaction between the community and the teaching staff and how the task force will interact with them. In Madison, I think it's very important that we do survey both the student body and parents and likewise the teachers. And I think that has to be a very careful, we have to be very careful in how we go about doing that. We have a lot of critics in our school district, and I feel like as a board member that I'm willing to invite those critics to the table, or I'm at least willing to have an open process that's very transparent where people can follow how that survey was done, how people were selected, because otherwise, as a board, when we go about setting policy, we will hear from everyone about, you didn't do this, you didn't do that. And it's just very important for me to understand how professional development, how this whole theory of teaching math, how it really impacts teachers in the classroom. Is it getting to teachers in the classroom? Are they understanding it? Do they feel like they are getting enough training? It's one thing to say you have professional development, but it's another to stand in front of a teacher and ask them and them be very open to being able to do that. So that's I think, a set of questions that will keep you busy. Thank you.
Okay, this is following up on our previous discussion about time. We're in the process of looking at a high school redesign. So in about a year and a half, we're going to have a plan for our high schools. And one of our high schools is on a block schedule, and I'll be very interested to see what you think of the difference between the achievement levels of success, the teaching, and the block schedule, that 90-minute amount of time, and then in the regular 50-minute amount of time that the other high school classes have and the other schools. And also the one thing I have heard about the block schedule is that sometimes there's too much of a lag time between courses. The course may not be available for the second semester, and so the student has to jump till the following fall. They'll take a course in the fall, and they have to wait until the following fall to take the sequence.
Just a clarification, there are various types of block scheduling. One type, the quarter block system, where it's been labeled Copernican, is where students in a high school would take only three or four courses in a semester. So if they took English in the fall, they might take math in the spring. Is that the kind of schedule?
That's correct.
So it's not a matter of is it available the next semester. In order to allocate teaching staff using a quarter block system, it's understood that a student takes a particular subject one semester of the year, but it's equivalent to the full year course in another high school.
Right. Okay. And I'll be interested to see just how much. How much do they forget by the beginning of the next course? You know, how successful is that system with the math?
Well, that's where if we have the resources, student interviews or surveys of those students and their perceptions in that school, along with the teacher and parent input, would be important.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
In addition to placement and testing from MATC, again, testing and evaluation services at UW-Madison do all of the placement testing for UW system and also have very good contacts with the private college system in Wisconsin. So they have quite a bit of data, not just by district but by high school. And in fact, they have been working to try to figure out a way to do some analyses that would correlate the curriculum, the actual courses taken by students with their scores on placement tests. They haven't figured out how to do that in an efficient way because of the volume of testing that they do. But there are some people at the university who have quite a bit of data and could be very helpful if you want to work with them. Then I just wanted to raise this. Go in a slightly different direction, and I don't know how one would get at this, but I want to raise it as something that's been on my mind for a long time, and that is, to what extent are the scores we're seeing reflective of access to outside resources or lack of access? And by that I mean, over the past several years, I've had a number of conversations, I've gone through it myself, with parents who are spending small fortunes sending their kids to Sylvan or doing Kumon or hiring private tutors, or in my neighborhood we had an entire private math class for middle school because parents wanted their kids to learn algebra and it wasn't happening in the middle school. And so my question, I don't know how we'd get at that. Maybe if we do some student surveys, there's a way, or parent surveys, there's a way to get at that. But one of my concerns is that as we look at the efficacy of any curriculum, that if there are extensive external interventions, then in fact, to what extent are we looking at the efficacy of the curriculum and the teaching, and to what extent are we looking at measures of class and access? Because there are chunks of our schools who do not have the means to access the private tutors and all of these other things. So it's that issue of, are we disenfranchising a chunk of our schools? How are the kids doing who don't have access to those types of external resources? I don't know how you get at it in a study like this, but I wanted to put it out there in case, with your many experiences, you had some ideas of how some of that could be integrated in.
I'm going to have Ms. Robarts be the final speaker in terms of this topic and then move us along in the agenda. Obviously, we have several other issues that we're dealing with on the agenda, but Ms. Robarts.
One last question, I guess. One of the things that has concerned me and others, which would be very helpful to have an explanation for, is this phenomenon. We have for a number of years required algebra in the ninth grade, and then we had an annual report in which we see the passage rate, the completion rate, disaggregated by race, economic status, ESL, so forth and so on. We also see the 10th grade algebra tests. And although our percentage of students of all kinds completing algebra has gone up considerably, including the percentage for African Americans and for low-income kids, what you see the next year when students take the 10th grade math test is that white and not low-income students are proficient and advanced on that test pretty much in the same percentage as those who completed algebra. So if you're white or you're not low income, you completed algebra, you're very likely, almost one for one, very close correlation, you're going to be proficient and advanced on the 10th grade math test. That is not true for low income students. It's particularly not true for African Americans. So what is there that we need to know about the completion? I guess it could be anything from they're completing, but that means they had a D, whereas others had an A or B or whatever. But certainly there's a concern there about the results on the 10th grade test. And
again, don't want to stop the conversation, but I know, but yeah. But I just, we do know it's going to be a fluid process. If people have other questions or would like just a thought in the middle of the night or whatever, I would if it's possible, could we send the comments to the superintendent? That way, then he can make sure that we all get it, and then that might spur other questions or comments. If you go directly to the co-chairs, then I think things might be lost a little bit, and I like to know what people are thinking, and it just, welcome. You just get other perspectives. So,
if you want to send them to me, I will be sure everybody gets them, and I will forward them to Jim and Merle. Yeah, you don't want to respond to each other.
No.
You send them to me. I will send them out so everybody, just like we do everything else, so everybody knows what you're getting. But then you have an open meetings issue if you then begin a discussion by email about those. So right. Send them to me. I'll send them to Merle, just so you know what everybody's talking about.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Wonderful discussion. We do have another agenda item that's, and I don't know if we kind of got into it, or that's number 6, and that's superintendent's performance.
I think that's what we just did.
Yeah, that's what I think too. So I think we got to that. Okay, folks, let's take a break. Okay, 10 minutes. Take a 10-minute break, and we'll come back.
Thank you, Jim.